Tēnā mana I nā reo ngā iwi motu motu, tēnā koutou katoa. Welcome back to our podcast focusing on the Featherston Book Town, which will be held on the between the 12th and the 14th of May this year. One of the many guests on a great lineup of talent over the weekend is Ryan McCahill, the author of the acclaimed book of Blood and Fire, Bound and Broken. Kia ora. Kia ora, Ryan. How are you today? And tell me, Ryan, tell me about your processes, how you sit down to write and what generates the juices, what gets you going?
Oh, it can be a little bit of anything. It just depends on the day. I think for me, I usually sit down. I kind of like to have an ending in mind before I start and then just kind of work my way there, just know where it's going to end and then see what happens.
Do you view writing as a chore, Ryan? You know, you get up, you have a routine, you organize your sort of thoughts, or are you the sort of writer that might sort of wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning with something, jot it down? You know, the process for authors is very different. How does it work for you?
Yeah, everyone's very different. I don't think I'd ever view it as a chore because I do it because I love it so much. Mm. But I do have to treat it as a business because it's what I pay my mortgage with. So I do have to be organized. I do have to make sure that I get my productivity out, and I have to make sure that I keep producing my books. But it's definitely, I definitely do it because I love it. It'd never be a chore. It can be very stressful. But it's definitely something I love doing.
Bill.
Ryan, can I ask the sort of the basic the question on everyone's mind? How did a Dublin-born fantasy writer end up in New Zealand?
Well, I'm actually, so my partner is from Pukekohe.
Oh,
so depending on when you ask her, that could be North Waikato or South Auckland, just depending on the time of day. But she moved over to Ireland in 2018. She came over just because she wanted to see some live music, get the culture, and then she came over, lived there for a few years, and then brought me back.
Wow. And tell me, the fantasy genre, I guess people like me who are not necessarily aficionados, but we'd think of things like, I guess, Game of Thrones and I guess Lord of the Rings would be the granddaddy of them all, I'd imagine. But it's a much bigger genre. It's a much bigger industry than most people, those of us that aren't deeply enmeshed with it, would know, right? It's actually quite a big deal globally.
Oh, it's one of those things. It's a strange one. Like fantasy is it's the foundation of all literary works. You know, the first stories were all fantasy, all fiction told around campfires by voice. It is the birth of fiction, essentially. But it's just, I think, when you discuss in literary circles, people, it's not as highbrow. You know, there's no way to make someone brings in dragons and swords, and there's no way to make that seem highbrow, really. But it's what a lot of people love. Like, all across the world, it's absolutely enormous. There's hundreds of millions of readers, and I think, especially with online and with stores like Amazon and stuff, it's just allowed people everywhere to just touch it and use it, and it's quite massive. But just sometimes in local areas, it's just not as, it's not looked upon in the same way as, I suppose, some more literary fiction.
So there's a bit of snobbery, do you think? I mean, would it be driving more book sales than literary fiction, for example?
A lot of the time, yeah, massively. It's a weird one because I think even back in Dublin, in Ireland as well, there is a bit of a snobbery towards it. Like, for instance, I think like in the last 2 years, I would have sold about 100,000 books, but I can't get a book into a bookstore in my local one in Dublin. But I'm stocked in hundreds of them in the US.
I want to talk about your whakapapa. Papa. You know, the Irish are great storytellers and have a great oral tradition. One of the reasons is because of their history was suppressed, and you know they had to almost go underground to tell their stories.
Quite a lot of similarities between two cultures.
Yeah, it's very similar to sort of, you know, Māori having a whakapapa of oral history and storytelling. How big an influence was your background in terms of being told stories by perhaps your aunties and uncles or mum and dad? How much of an influence
everything.
Was that?
Yeah. It's absolutely everything, because I think I didn't have a lot of writing up until recently when I did it, but like my love of all fantasy and books and stories and worlds all came from my family and the way they told stories. When they read books, they'd always put on different voices and they'd walk around the room and they'd pretend they were characters. And it was, that was massive for me falling in love with storytelling. The more and more I get into this career and the deeper I get, the more I realize how important that was.
Can you tell us a little bit, Ryan, about your universe, your fictional universe? Give us a 3,000 foot overview of the world you've created.
It's like, it's classic epic fantasy. It is like elves and dwarves and swords and dragons, very similar to Lord of the Rings kind of style and vibe, but it is kind of brought up to be more of an adult style fantasy. It's a bit grittier. There's a bit more realism to it. There's a bit more, we deal with a lot more kind of not political topics, but like darker emotional themes and things. It was kind of what I tried to do was take the feeling and nostalgia you got when you were a kid from reading things like Lord of the Rings and bring that forward to when you're an adult. Because sometimes when you read back the stories that you loved when you were young, they don't hit the same way because maybe the language is slightly different or the themes were aimed towards younger people. So I was trying to take that and capture it for a more adult audience.
Can I ask you too, how do you, and I hope this certainly is absolutely not meant to offend, but how do you, and this is again somebody who's alien to the genre really, how do you avoid Lord of the Rings lapsing into Princess Bride, if you know what I mean? How do you, at what point do you think, you know, how do you understand the constraints of the genre to retain?
Like, as in, how do you stop yourself from kind of like repeating the past and just kind of telling the same stories?
Well, that, and also it can become, you know, because it is so otherworldly, right? By definition. But isn't there a danger if you don't do it, if you don't create that world in a way that connects with the readers, aren't you at risk of sort of losing them entirely? How do you create a universe that retains enough believability, if you like, or enough relatability that people stick with it?
Well, that's a balance that all authors strike. And I think it's one of the things about fantasy, and especially modern fantasy. Now, I think a lot of modern fantasy books will... What the touchstone that people have now is when you go to, like, say, literary fantasy, literary books tend to all be about plot. It's all about, you know, A to B, what happens, how do you get there, how do you figure it out? But modern fantasy, the way you create a touchstone with it is it's about the characters. And you don't always create touchstones about the world, but it's how the characters interact with the world. And if you can make somebody feel what the character feels, and if you can make somebody think, oh, I would have made that decision, or I can understand why they're making this decision, or I understand why they're sad or angry or happy. I think using that to communicate the world to readers is what's really important. And it's really, all the biggest modern fantasies now that are coming through, they're all very character focused and character driven. And that's what all of them are. They're character studies. And it's using the character to bring that world into the real world. You know, the difference is I was told something a while ago, basically, it's hard for someone to believe a Pegasus exists. Okay. You say, you know, it's a horse with wings.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It's crazy. But if you tell somebody how you would saddle a Pegasus, if you tell somebody how the saddle works, how it goes under the wings, if somebody understands this ground concept that we all know, a saddle on a horse, if they understand how that amazing creature is saddled, all of a sudden they don't disbelieve the creature anymore. Because you've explained to them the simple thing that they can touch. They know the saddles go on horses, and now they know how to saddle a Pegasus. And it's kind of, those kind of things tend to work really well.
That was a fantastic answer, Ryan. I feel vastly better educated about the field you're writing in, by the way you answered that. Good, because what you're saying is it's the universality of character. That's the way in for people. It's not
100%.
It's not the idiosyncrasies of the fictional universe as much as it is about the relatable characters that may or may not be human, you know?
Yeah, it's that. And when you take people through, there was another example that I found a while ago, which is brilliant about character, is in that it's, especially with like Game of Thrones, you have so many characters, and it's about creating the believability in how characters are as diverse as humans. And one of the easiest ones I saw a while ago was someone was saying how you change how different people see the same thing. So you have a person walks into a bar and a guy walks in, they see this gorgeous blonde woman sitting in the bar, and they spend 15 pages talking about this beautiful, beautiful woman. And the next guy walks in and he sees this person sitting in this gorgeous leather chair with hand stitches. And it's what the character focuses on when they come in, and it changes their believability and it changes you being able to see that different people see the same thing different ways.
Because I'm thinking about my own experience of Game of Thrones, which I've watched every minute of it, but even a minute after I've watched an episode, I couldn't do a decent job of telling you what happened. So it's not the plot at all. I couldn't care less. I couldn't care less about the plot. I can't keep up with all the names and places. But it's the I identify with certain characters. That's what draws me back in. So I guess if I interrogate my own experience with the genre, it's very much character-driven.
Yeah, you end up falling in love with the way certain characters see things and the way they act and the way they treat other people. And the Game of Thrones audiobooks are actually fantastic for that. They're some of the best ones because they're really deep into the character. And it's really fun to listen to. And you realize when you look back, that's why people love listening to Tyrion, because he's so witty and because he's so sharp. And, you know, you wish you were like that. Yeah. You wish you had those answers.
Oh, and on that note, Ryan, you know, writing quite a life of solitude, it's you. Some people in 2023 still like long form, pen and paper, using the laptop, using their computer. Then you get the moment where you get to meet your fans, and you know, and you have many, and your readers. How do you find that interaction? Do you at times find it a little bit overbearing, or how do you handle that?
Honestly, it is, because I think I only started this journey about 2 years ago, and I was a biochemist before that, and it's kind of all exploded very quickly. And I'm going to Dragon Con in the US this year. I'm getting flown over, and there's 100,000 people at it, and then I'm going to another one over in the UK just after that as well. And I was there last year, and I had a fan drive 400 miles. Just to come in to get a book signed, which was crazy. It's weird. It's very, very strange. But it's honestly great, though. It's probably one of the best things. The writing is so solitary that sometimes, you know, meeting people, it's like almost like going to work in a good way. You get to go and meet the people that kind of make it worthwhile.
Yeah, well, fans in the sort of fantasy realm, you know, aren't half-hearted, are they? They tend to be fully committed.
It's the most passionate thing you'll ever see.
Yeah, that's incredible. Do you find it sort of surprising to encounter people who have so deeply internalized your characters and are so invested in your storylines? I mean, do you find that sort of... How do you find that?
Yeah, well, I have a few communities online, and I have a Discord server online where there's maybe 500-600 people in that one, and that's kind of for more the hardcore readers. And there's someone there who's read... She's on her sixth reread of the series. And the books are quite big. So between them so far, there's probably, I'd say, about 4,000 pages worth of books. And, yeah, she's on her sixth reread. She probably knows them better than I do. It's crazy, but it's great. It's amazing.
And that's the point. Do they ask you there are books that I could name where I find that the character – I want to know what happened to the character post the book. How did the character evolve – pre the book being written? Do you get a lot of that? Do you get a lot of those questions?
Oh, all the time. Yeah. All the time. All those kind of theories and different bits and pieces. And it all just depends. Depending on the answer, I might have to just say, look, read and find out. I'm going to have some more books in this, and then you'll probably get the answers you're looking for. But no, that happens quite a lot. And I think recently there's actually a guy in New Zealand, in Hawke's Bay, who got a tattoo of one of the characters all down his calf. Mm. It's massive and it's gorgeous tattoo.
Wow.
It's really cool. It's weird to see, but it's really nice.
So have you got any of the big streaming services sniffing around your screening rights?
Yeah, well, there's a few different things now. I have an agent as of last year, and we're looking into that stuff, and we have a few different translation deals for Italian and different languages over in Europe. So that's all starting to come together, which is really cool.
I believe there's some capacity in New Zealand TV and film production industry.
Just a little bit,
there might be a little bit of capacity. If you want to do it here, I'm sure there'll be plenty of people wanting to help you.
Ryan, you said you were relatively new to this gig, you know, full-time, successful author, formerly a biochemist. What was the tipping point when you said to yourself, Ryan, I'm giving the day gig away, I'm going
to focus on...
Here.
I had to quit my job to move here. And then we had to make the decision, you know, do I continue in the career I'm in, or do I try and go for this? And honestly, at the time, I probably wasn't earning enough money to go full time.
Yeah.
But then we moved here in August 2021. My second book dropped in December on New Year's Eve, and then from then on, then it was viable, and then that just kept going. So it was very much, I probably wasn't at the point where I could have given it a full time, but I just said, you know what, let's go, let's try it. We're moving country, moving to New Zealand, new place, let's try it all.
And apart from that, and the change of life circumstances, has living in the Western Bay of Plenty, has that influenced either your characters, the scene in terms of what's happening in Aotearoa, or is it just simply a venue from which you write from?
Well, we've been unfortunate, because when we moved first, we were up in Auckland and we got 6 days out and we were stuck in the Auckland lockdowns. And then we've had all the crazy storms since we've moved here. I think everybody knows about them. So we haven't got to see as much as it would have liked to have seen. But just the landscape in general is just such an amazing place to write in. It really is. People talk about it all the time. But I think when you're here and you get to actually go out and take a look around, you realize how amazing it is.
Yeah, well, Ireland's not terribly hard on the eyes either, though, is it?
No, but it's a lot colder.
Yes, that's true. I think that's fascinating. And I've got to say, Ryan, you're talking about sales that
phenomenal
would blow the minds of a lot of working authors. Even I mean, you know, you've got a huge audience. You're going to Dragon Con, where you'll be swamped by people in cosplay maybe, and yet you can maintain, you know, complete anonymity of a Tauranga writer. While you've got this live audience. I just think it's a fascinating story.
It's one of the advantages, I think, like the fact that, like, I'm an independently published author. Like, I made that choice because it was just what I wanted, and it means I can kind of maximize like ebooks and online sales, and I don't have to rely on bookshops and trying to make those print sales, which are a lot harder. There's a lot more overheads, and it makes it a lot more accessible for people across the world. And it's been really nice. It's been a really interesting journey.
Accessibility. You mean affordability, because that is one of the things about, hard form books, you know, very expensive.
But particularly, actually, and I do mean both. I mean, accessibility and affordability. Mm. And in particular in New Zealand and Australia, I was quite shocked when I came. I was actually saying just the taxes on books. So we don't have taxes on the arts and books in Ireland. So like my book here would probably be maybe 30 to 40% more expensive than it would be in Ireland.
That may explain why Ireland got about 5 Nobel Prizes in literature and Booker Prizes and every other. I think half the Oscars went to, if it wasn't going to Chinese
artists.
Yeah,
it was a lot this year.
It was Irish actors, wasn't it? I mean, it is. Yeah. For a country with a relatively modest population, and a country that's undergone incredible disruptions over the recent history, a really amazing creative output. From that category.
Yeah, we just can't match staggering. You guys at rugby, though.
Well, you can. You can.
Well, you can. You can have everything.
Recently, it's been a bit better for me, because beforehand, what I've discovered is it's not good to be in a bar with a bunch of Kiwis when you're Irish, whether you win or lose.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, given I think that rugby is probably Ireland's fourth or fifth largest sport, you're not doing too bad. Ryan.
Oh, no, definitely. Exactly. You guys are earning it, though.
So Ryan, tell me something. What are you working on now? Is it a continuation of your series, or do you start something afresh and introduce new characters to your readers? How do you do this?
Yeah, at the minute the way I break my series down is I do a series of novels and novellas. So I currently have 5 books published in the last 2 years, and I'm currently working on the next novella. So what I usually do is I really have a main release, and then in between I write a novella, which will focus deeper into some character work and give a far more kind of insight into certain characters. And a lot of readers love that, because it means in between the bigger releases, there's still something to sink their teeth into. So I'm doing that now. And then I'm actually flying to Portugal with my partner to get married in June. And then we come back to New Zealand, and then focusing on the fourth book after that. So yeah, I've quite a bit in this. There's probably over 200 named characters in the series so far. So there's a lot of people to kind of get stuck into.
Is that becoming a trend in the fantasy genre, that people are varying up the types of books they're putting out? So longer, sort of, you know, doorstop George R. R. Martin type tomes, and then novella type, you know, shorter versions that are more character or individual character focused. I mean, is that a degree of flexibility that you have as an independent.
I do think that has a lot to do. It has a lot to do with my flexibility that I'm able to do that, because I think in traditionally published markets with bigger publishers like Hachette and Penguin, a lot of it is focused on money. So it's focused on print cost.
Yeah.
You won't get a lot of authors being given the ability to produce large books. So like my most recent book was 430,000 words, which is probably about 1,500 printed pages, and that's one book. And it's done fantastically for me, because you know I get a lot of my sales on ebook, and it doesn't matter the print cost or the overhead. I can make the print book, but I don't make my money off the print book. I have them because I know readers love them. Whereas for traditionally published authors, the money is in the print book, and a lot of the time, unless they're really trusted, they aren't given the ability to write those longer books. They have no choice. So I have the flexibility of form, because you know I can market it my own way. I can do it my own way, and I choose what I think will work.
But also Ryan, as part of it, you creating your sort of your own problem in terms of expectations from your fans, from your readers, who just want the next hit, who just want the next fix, who want to know what happened to character A or character B.
Yeah, that's a big thing. Pace and pressure is difficult, but it's part of the job, is learning to condition readers into a release schedule. So, you know, they know that if I'm consistently productive. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Whatever you set, you need to stick to, I think, it's all about expectation and promise. It's the same as with a book. When you write a book, if the first part of your book is grim and dark and people are being killed everywhere, that kind of needs to be your tone, because you're setting your promise in the book.
Yeah.
You can't do that and then turn it into a romance. Yeah. So it's the same as when you're doing publishing, is you condition it. You say, look, I'm going to release a big book every year, and I'm going to release a small book halfway through the year. And you know that's the schedule, so you'll leave me alone in between.
So for you, the deadline pressure is from readers, not from publishing companies, not from editors, not from 100%.
But like,
it's from readers.
Yeah, it's from readers, but it's also, like, I would tweet myself, so the way I look at it, it is very much a business to me, and I am the publisher, so I set my own deadlines. And so I will set hard deadlines with distributors and with Amazon and stuff like that, and I have to stick to them. I think sometimes it's really important. Some people work different ways, but for me, I need to set that deadline, or it'll take longer than it needs to.
But
I think sometimes I look at it, because I'm a chemist, I look at it like a gas. You know, the time you take to do something will expand to whatever amount of time you give yourself.
But also, Ryan, part of it is this, and I'll just set up the question, it's connectivity. You know, I could go online, I could find your email address, perhaps your Twitter bio, and I can be talking to you. Is that part of it also?
Oh, it's massive. I think at this stage right now, I currently have just over 400 emails to catch up on.
Yeah.
And I get them a rate, probably about 10 a day from people in different parts of the world. And then with Twitter and with my Discord. So my Discord, I don't know if you've used Discord before, but it's basically like a social server.
Yes.
That is just specifically for me and my readers, and they'll come in, and there's channels to discuss all the books. People will have read-alongs. So as they read the books, they comment and other readers comment back. But then part of the expectation there is the reason they are there is because they can discuss with other readers about my books, but then I'm there too.
So
that's amazing, isn't it?
Part of it.
So Ryan, you're going to the Featherstone Booktown Festival, which is going to be held, of course, in Featherstone from the 12th to the 14th of May. What are your expectations?
Honestly, I don't know. I'm really looking forward to it. It'll be my first event since I've been in New Zealand, and I'm just really looking forward to it. One thing I love so far since I've been here is just the atmosphere and the way people treat each other, and the kind of the vibes that are there to me are just so positive and friendly. And I'm just really looking forward to that. And I was talking to some of the organizers, and I'm looking forward to the fact that it's kind of like a smaller, tight-knit thing. It's a bit more laid back, and people can really express themselves and play music and books and culture. And I'm kind of mostly looking forward to just diving into that and seeing what it's like.
And Ryan, based on your numbers, you could well be the most prolific in terms of readers, New Zealand-based author at this point in time.
It's strange to even contemplate that, to be totally honest. I'm still not in that mind space, but it's very much a possibility. It has been a bit crazy in the last while. So, it's weird to contemplate that, but it is possible.
Congratulations on your success.
Yeah,
and I think
phenomenal.
I think the story is the message is, I'm no literary critic, but the message is if you're a biochemist and you're wondering whether you should stick with biochemistry or jump feet first into being a fantasy fiction author, go for the latter. You only live once.
Exactly.
And Ryan sends a message that, you know what, it'll work if you're passionate enough. And you
I
work
think the general, thing for me is that, like, just don't ever tell yourself you can't do something, because you won't know until you try it. It's like you lose 100, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And at the very least, exactly. Just give yourself a chance. If it's something you're passionate about, something you love, whether it's writing, whether it's music, whether it's anything, you won't know if you'll ever be able to do anything with it until you try.
Hey, that's
I hope a lot of those kids from South Wairarapa schools get to hear that message when you're in Featherston, because they're deeply involved.
Yeah, hopefully.
In the festival, and I think that's a message kids, you know, can't hear enough of.
It's one of the things that with the way things are online now, the way things are interactive with independent publishing, like, it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter where you're from, it doesn't matter anything like that at all. You write a good book, you get passionate about it, you put it out there, and you have just as much chance as anyone. It's what's great about that independent market and how it's growing is all people are caring about is books.
Look,
fantastic,
and a great place to leave our podcast this afternoon. Ryan Cahill, who will be appearing at the Featherston Booktown Festival from the 12th to the 14th of May. Kia ora. Thank you very much for being with us today, Ryan.